Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The College Football Experience Dan Hawkins interview on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pickup for a chance to win 100 times the amount of money you could enter in NBA, MLB, UFL, college football, MMA, NHL, golf, and much, much more. Sign up today at underdogfantasy.com. Use that promo code TCESGPN. You get 100% deposit match. And remember, as always, folks, to let it ride.
This is Dan Hawkins. You're listening to SGPN. Let it ride.
Yes! Woo-hoo! Welcome to the College Football Experience bonus episode. Yes, Dan Hawkins interview. I'm excited to do this episode, and hopefully you're on YouTube.com/thecollegeexperience. Hit that like, hit that subscribe. As I was honored to sit down with Coach Hawkins here, I like to think the guy that started the Boise State. You know, one of the guys that really was an important figure in starting Boise State's success in college football, in my opinion, on the FBS level, that is. Former Boise State head coach, former Colorado Buffalo head coach, former UC Davis head coach, also coached overseas, coached in the CFL with the Montreal Alouettes. I had the opportunity to sit down with him and talk to him. And that's what this episode is about. If you're wondering who the hell you're listening to, that's fair. My name is Colby Swiggin, Dantabase Dan, AKA Pick Dundee. That's not a pick. This is a pick.
He was raised in the land down under, where a man thinks on his feet, speaks with his fists, and lives by his wits.
When Dundee happened, he was a superstar.
Nobody knows nothing.
Somebody knows. Double the price, but no one touches Dundee.
Yes, I mean, you look at what Dan Hawkins has done in his career. First off, former fullback. Let's not bury the lead here. Make fullbacks great again. We're going to talk about that. But no, this is a former Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year. Big Sky Coach of the Year, two-time WAC Coach of the Year. The guy's been coaching since 1983, might I add. So I was very excited to have the opportunity to sit down with the former head coach, just recently retired from UC Davis, but going on a hiatus, but I think he's going to get back to coaching soon. It's in the blood, it seems like. And I was honored to sit down with Coach, but I'm excited to bring you that interview. But before we do that, I want to tell you that the College Football Experience, first off, you're listening to the College Football Experience, which is part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Are you a hardcore baseball fan? Or maybe just a degenerate sitting in an office looking for some afternoon action. Either way, you'll want to find you'll want to make sure you subscribe to the MLB Gambling Podcast wherever you can get your podcast. Because they're always serving high heat over there. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Yes, the NBA playoffs are here, and our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, wants to make it a lot more interesting. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Playing their pick'em game is as simple as selecting higher or lower on player stats like points, rebounds, assists, and much, much more. You can make entries of all basketball players, you know, in the NBA playoffs right now, or you can mix and match across your other favorite sports. Maybe you want MLB, maybe you want UFL, some spring football action, or maybe NHL. They got you covered. You can win up to 100 times the amount of money you enter, and it's a ton of fun. And look, Underdog's available in 30 different states, including California and Texas, and even the great country of Canada. So what are you doing? Make sure you sign up. And when you sign up, use that promo code TCESGPN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TCE. SGPN. All right. We are back on the College Football Experience, and shout out to the chat. And to see the chats rocking along, youtube.com/thecollegeexperience. Once again, hit that like, hit that subscribe, because I was honored to sit down with a coach that I think is a very good football coach that's proven it on so many different levels. So yeah, here is that interview with former Boise State and Colorado Buffalo and UC Davis head coach Dan Hawkins. Joining me on the College Football Experience is former head coach of the Boise State Broncos, the Colorado Buffaloes, and the UC Davis Aggies, and former ESPN commentator Dan Hawkins. Dan, it's an honor to have you on the show. And I should mention also that I believe you have the longest winning streak in WAC football history. How you doing? And I appreciate you coming on the show.
I'm well. You got that jazzed up radio voice going on. So I don't know, that win streak was so long ago. I'm kind of more into what's happening now and the next day than what happened in the past.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the now. Like you recently, you know, retired from coaching at UC Davis. Tim Platt
I'm reloading. That's not a good term.
Okay.
Reloading.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was going to be the question. I'm sitting there and I'm like doing my homework over here, and I'm like, 63 years old. You know, there's still you know, life there. So you want to coach football again?
Yeah, and I will. I'm kind of a curious creature. I've always said I think these jobs are somewhere between 5 and 8 years. I've been at Davis for 7, and I think I've been all over the globe. Literally, I think I've coached in 12 different countries and every level other than the NFL. So I've been learning. I've been talking to guys. I've been watching. I've been helping out some sports, lacrosse and water polo and volleyball at Davis, and running around commiserating with coaches, watching practice. And that's been very invigorating, because I love to learn and I love to get better.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
And I really love helping young people, and I love the game. But I really love helping young people, and I just wanted to get out and kind of till the soil and grow some new knowledge, and it's been great.
Coaching just in your blood. You're crossing over sports, doing the Bo Jackson thing, and so one thing I noted here was that you played fullback at UC Davis, then you got to coach your alma mater. First off, I follow the account on Twitter, Make Fullbacks Great Again. Where are you at with the pulse of the fullback in football in 2024? Are we going to get a renaissance or what?
I laugh. I say we were such bad athletes. Nobody even wants us on the field anymore. You know, my other common standard is they go, hey, do you golf? And I'm like, I'm a fullback. Do any fullbacks golf? No, they do not. Sometimes when I joke and I tell people I played full guard and they go, what? And I said, yeah, I had a running back number on it, but I basically was a guard in the backfield. So especially for us at Davis, we kind of ran the I formation and you practice shortening your neck up against linebackers and safeties. And every once in a while they throw you a bone and, but it's hard, as you all know. I mean, football is a game of math and geometry. And the more guys you start putting in there, the more guys they start putting in there, and the harder it is to execute all those blocks to get something open. So that's why the space game has come around. It's interesting with the reduction in formations and people running escort motion and doing those things, bringing people into the formation but not lining them up in the backfield. But, yeah, fullbacks are kind of a dinosaur. I always tell the high school coaches, don't ever tell a college coach your kid's a strong safety or a fullback, because they'll just immediately go tone deaf on you.
Oh, man, I needed to come back. Where's the Tom Rathmans? And look, I know you blocked for Ken O'Brien. I was trying to do the math. It was Ken O'Brien, the former New York Jet. I'm assuming that fullback counts. Like, when you get drafted, you're supposed to buy the offensive line a meal. Does the fullback get part of that package or what?
I don't know. My one funny O'Brien story is when I first got there, I ran a little route out in the flat, and I came back and I said, hey, OB, I was wide open. And he goes, two things. One, don't ever tell me you're wide open. And two, why would I throw it to you for a 5-yard gain when I could throw it to Alan Fleming for 40 yards? And I was smart enough. My GPA was high enough. I said, I got that. I resonated with both those comments.
Now you mentioned you just, I couldn't even pull up this nugget. I was doing my homework on you, and you coach in how many different countries? Because Mike Leach was a good friend of ours. Rest in peace to the great Mike Leach. Yeah. And, you know, one of my favorite times, you know, he invited us up to Pullman, you know, and he's been on our show a bunch of times. And one of my favorite stories from hanging out with him was with him coaching in Finland with his offensive line smoking cigarettes in the huddle. What countries did you coach in?
I was the offensive coordinator for the Karlstad Crusaders in Sweden, in Karlstad, Sweden. I was the offensive coordinator for the Vienna Vikings in Vienna. I coached the United States national team. It was going to be in Sweden, but it was not. It was in Canton. And I coached a team in Australia. And then, of course, here's a great story for you. When I was the OC at Karlstad, we played in Serbia for the European Championships on top of a 5-story mall. The field was the ceiling of the mall, and we beat Serbia to win the European Championship on top of a 5-story mall.
Your wife had to love that. She's like, honey, I'm going to do some shopping. I'll check out the game a little bit, but no, I mean, that's insane.
Well, I'm like Mike. I like a lot of things out of the box for sure. I know Mike very well, God rest his soul. And I'm a pirate at heart too. My line was, I always said, I actually did sail on a Russian pirate ship in the Baltic Sea for 10 days. I said, you know, Mike masquerading as a pirate. I actually was a pirate on a tall ship. So I said, I got one.
I know he's gone now, but did you ever tell him that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I bet that. Well, Mike Leach, you know, for me, what happened, my story with Mike Leach is I just wrote an article saying I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in college football. And I wake up with a DM on my Instagram from like a empty user. And I'm like, and it's like, Coach Leach likes your work. And I'm like, well, who the hell is this? I thought it was like a bot or something. I'm like, am I getting spammed? But then I follow through it. I'm like, can I get in touch with you? And next thing you know, we're getting invited up to Pullman, and he'd been on our show a bunch of times. But part of my, and he told me to marry my wife, by the way. I like to think it was his best play call that he's ever called. But when you call Mike Leach, you don't know where the conversation's going. Like,
No question. I always say, if you go there and you want to just know about one play, like, that conversation is going to go through several centuries, several iterations. You may or may not get to the answer. I mean, it'll be, but I kind of love that a little bit. I'm an out of the box guy as well, and I like talking about other things. I actually went down and spoke at his Key West clinic down there, that was an air raid clinic, which I'm not an air raid guy now. My son Cody is a dyed-in-the-wool run and shoot air raid guy now, but I said, I'm not really an air raid guy. And he goes, yeah, but you like all that wacky stuff like we do. So we're going to bring you down here. But I miss Mike, and he's very refreshing. I mean, fun fact, a little bit about Mike, and I think this is in coaching in general. He never won a conference championship, but he was smart enough to understand, particularly some of these outposts that he went, like, how do you run a system that you have a chance every Saturday? Your fans know you have a chance. You're going to be exciting. You're going to go score some points, and people get mad at that style because you do not run the ball. You've got to run the ball to win at some point, but you got to give him credit, whether it's Tech or Washington State or Mississippi State. I mean, his team's always had a chance, and they're always exciting. And I think that's a little bit of the genius of Mike is sometimes everybody's trying to build for a championship, but maybe your place is not capable of winning a championship. Maybe you don't have the resources or the location or whatever to win a championship, but how do you be great? And how do you be exciting? And how do you be fun? And how do you be competitive every Saturday? And I think that's a real genius of Mike.
Yeah. And I always wondered to me, like once you got to see, he was making strides of, you know, by landing in the SEC at Mississippi State, I was wondering, wow, he's going to have a different type of athlete than you have at Washington State. And unfortunately it got cut short because I think that would have been his best team last year. You know, if had that, you know, obviously the unfortunate situation that happened with Coach Leach, but it is interesting and even crazier is he told me he modeled that after the triple option. Did you know that?
Yeah. If you go back, what's the name of the book that Hal had written? I think it's called The Perfect Pass. Pretty amazing story of how that all came about and how they went through it. And yeah, lot of genius in there. And I know Hal very well as well. So we talk a lot and share a lot of ideas. And I love those out of the box guys. I mean, I don't care whether you go Pele or Gretzky. There's a lot of sports figures and sports teams. Look at the United States hockey team when we won the gold in 80. Like sometimes you've got to get out of the box. Sometimes you got to do something different and have some courage and be able to do that. Now you face some ridicule there at sometimes, but coming up with a new formula to me is always fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Now like your son is the head coach of Idaho State, the Bengals. And I'll be honest. I didn't know what to expect last year because the year prior, they'd had the university had, you know, a short tenure with the coach. Also it was just all over the place. It seemed like the transfer portal, but I was really impressed with your son's first season in Pocatello there. You know, it might not have accumulated the amount of wins, but for year one, they were way more competitive. They almost beat San Diego State out the gate. How was it seeing your son sit back there as head football coach in your conference? And I know you guys played, but how was it to sit back and watch your son?
Well, what was fun? I mean, when you're a coach's kid and people always go, oh yeah, he's Hawkins' kid and all that. But I mean, the reality is you're going through this lab every day from the time you're 10 years old. I always tell people he's 36, but he's really 56. I mean, he's been around Larry Karras at Mount Union. I mean, Mel Churchma from, you know, he's been around some Hall of Fame guys. He was Mark Trestman in Montreal. He'd been around Dirk Cutter and Chris Peterson and Brian Harsin. I mean, he's been around a lot of football coaches and learned. And we always talked about this, you know, when you're taking over a program, what's the best way to jumpstart it? Well, in my mind, as you said, you're either going to go in and throw it around or you're going to run the triple option. Well, the triple is kind of hard to evolve from. That's the problem there. But you can get into, and he's largely a run and shoot. And it's not exactly, but I'm telling you, if anybody in the country wants every film of June Jones and Mouse Davis, and Cody is the purveyor of all things run and shoot. So he said when he came here, he goes, hey, we're going to lead the conference in passing and having fun. And he said, when I say passing, I don't mean yards. I mean, just throwing it. And they actually did lead FCS in passing yards. They did. And then he got Josh Runda from Iowa State out of that Haycock defensive system, which, you know, they run that 5-3-3 and it's just wicked and people hate it. So everything he does in every phase, I mean, people hate it. It's a little bit different. And so it gives them a chance.
And you're right. They lost by 7 to San Diego State. I think they only got blown out one game. They should have beat us. We had a kid, Lance Larrison, who's the next Christian McCaffrey. And we were down in that game. We got some turnovers, but I told our guys, just quit thinking and give it to Lance. And he won the game for us. But and they outcoached us. They outplayed us. They should have won the game. But they were in pretty much every game. So it'll be interesting to see, though, because teams will catch up with them this year. They'll have spent time working on defense and offense. So they'll have to turn over the leaf a little bit.
Now, I was really impressed by his first year of coaching. I really was. And I think, you know, it's something to monitor moving forward. I thought they did a good job in the portal in the offseason. But I do want to ask, how is that as a father son there when you beat your son? Do you cheer him up, or do you say, look, you're great, but you'll never be me? I don't know. I mean, like, how did that go?
It was the most miserable 60 minutes of my life, truthfully. He's kind of been my best friend. I mean, he's obviously my son, but we have coached together and with each other. I mean, he was around in all these stops, these European stops, and we did camps in Europe and Germany. We did camps in Australia. And then he's a darn good coach. So I lost a really good friend and a darn good coach. And then not only that, I said it was like a Russian spy. He's over on the sideline. You know, he's yelling stuff out to their defense. I mean, he's doing covert ops against us. So there was a lot of mixed emotions. Of course, I was happy to win, but we do. People always think it's us versus them, and it really never is. And people don't like that because fans don't go there, but it's really us versus us. And quite frankly, if they don't turn the ball over, they were turning the ball over going in at one point, and then they turned the ball over backed up. Two critical places for them to, they don't turn the ball over those two times, could be a different story. So it was tough for a lot of reasons. I was happy to get the W, that's for sure. And so I guess I stepped out at the right time, so he doesn't have a chance to come back.
Exactly. I mean, in a way, coach, this is great. This could, you could be, you know, 95 years old on your deathbed and just say, but I did get you. now you mentioned, you mentioned Chris Peterson and Brian Harsin and everything. And, you know, I don't know how you would, categorize this or how you would take this, but I think of Boise State football, first off, as someone that loved college football my whole life, and then out of nowhere, Boise State shows up to the FBS and just kind of starts out of the blue with the field, and it starts beating all these teams. I mean, whether it started with Fresno's Pat Hill teams or June Jones, friend of the program as well, been on the show and a great guy, beating Hawaii teams and in the WAC back then, but also in the meanwhile, I think, you know, taking down Iowa State, taking down Oregon State. I mean, one year you were 13-1 with your only loss being a 2-point loss to a Oregon State team that was really good that year with Mike Riley. I know Peterson had it, you know, won the Fiesta Bowl, the crazy trick play. That is amazing. I still watch that all the time and just say, what a great play call. But
truth is, we practiced that play a ton of times and you could hardly ever get it to work, but by golly, got it there.
There we go. But look, when I think of that Boise State, you know, run, which is still going on, they haven't had a losing season since the late 90s. My first thought is Dan Hawkins. My second thought is Chris Peterson. Do you think that's fair that does Dirk Cutter deserve that as well? Or yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Here's the true story. And I'm not trying to be self-depreciating at all. This is the honest truth. So Boise State won a national championship in junior college, a D2 national championship. Jim Kreiner won an FCS national championship, and they won a national championship at every year. Boise State been good for a long, long time. It's a good town. It's a good place to recruit to. You're close to California. You can get kids there. So they went through a rough spot there where they were moving up. Pokey Allen, God rest his soul, he got sick. Tom Mason, an interim coach, took over. You know, H came in. Houston Nutt came in for 1 year. They were going through a lot of tumultuous, going up to FBS. So Dirk Cutter comes in, and I knew Dirk from Oregon, and really Chris Peterson was the way I got on Dirk's staff, because I'd been a head coach and been around a little bit and had done a lot of things, and Dirk just
wanted kind of a fireman. He wanted a Swiss Army knife, and I could do that. So Dirk had been all over the place. I mean, Missouri and Boston College, and he'd been with a lot of people. And Dirk really taught me Division I football, but Dirk was the guy that really got it going. We were 6-4 our first year there, and then we won 10 games back-to-back and two bowl games. And Dirk, if you know anything about science, like inertia takes the most force has to be required in getting a ball rolling. And he did that. And that I give him all the credit for that. Now, when I came, or when I was on his staff, and then I got the head job. So what I really did, and I'm a big thinker anyways, I think what we did is, or I tried to do is to say, hey, look at Nebraska. Look, you know, we're Boise State football is kind of the thing in Idaho. We have a chance to be really good. And I said we could be a top 15 team, and people kind of laughed. But I spent a lot of emotional capital trying to continue to rally the city and rally the administration and rally fundraising and being able to put a good staff together. You know, Chris Peterson and I, we both went to UC Davis. I mean, Mike Bellotti, Gary Patterson, Paul Hackett, huge lineage of great coaches from Davis. I actually coached the tight ends 1 year when Pete was the OC, but, you know, he got into the shifting and the motioning, and we used to joke all the time, no real football players, because he's very creative in his own way as well. I mean, we never wanted an offense that was see ball, get ball. So that was largely Chris Peterson's doing. And he got all that thing going. I was trying to raise the expectations and the money. You mentioned the Fresno State game. I remember with our booster group on Monday after that game. I mean, I kind of laid it down. I said, did you guys like that? And of course they did. And I said, well, hey, our strength coach is 8th in the conference. Our salary is 10th in the guy. I started reeling this off, and our AD was looking at me like, what are you doing? And I was going, I'm trying to jumpstart this thing. I want people to get in and support this thing. And they did. They did. And so we had tremendous players. A lot of those guys played in the NFL. And so then Chris Peterson takes over, and he goes to another level. But he was hugely responsible for what we did when I was there. And he also had a connection to Dirk. So it was a very unique, you know, continuous, long, it wasn't starting over each year. And I think that led both for the fans and the kids and the program, that continuity was huge. And then, of course, you know, it goes on to Brian Harsin, and Harsh played with me and Dirk. I gave Harsh a GA job. Then he coached with Pete. So the philosophy of how we did things and the science of football and the intangible part of it, all those people were very much on the same page. But we got lucky. That was the age of ESPN. And, of course, we were playing every Thursday and Friday night, so a lot of people saw us, and that was great, and that added to the profile. But, I mean, everybody had their role. But, I mean, Dirk Cutter was the guy that got it rolling. Everybody goes, oh, you know, Hawk, you put it on the map. I did not at all. We were fortunate with ESPN. I had a great staff. You know, Chris Strasser now coaches in the National Football League. I mean, Robert Prince now coaches in the National Football League. I mean, I had a lot of great coaches on that staff that went on to unbelievable things, including Pete. So it was a group effort. It was a community effort. You know, I remember one time we were talking about building a press box or building a new indoor. And our president said at the time, well, Hawk, what do you want to do? I said, well, you build the indoor. That helps get more players. They're going to train there. They're going to see that. Let's get the indoor. So a lot of people dumped millions of dollars in that, and they helped you. And everybody was on the same page. So it was a lot of people in the canoe rowing hard in the same direction.
And there's something to me to capitalizing on whether it's weekday games, whether it's, you know, they use the blue turf. I was at a diner in Culver City, California, where I was back to another booth. And I heard a guy and two girls talking about, they're just randomly bring up Boise State. And the woman says, that's that team that plays on Thursdays with the blue turf. And I was like, they're genius. They're genius at marketing. They're genius. But I've always wondered why don't schools capitalize more on the weekday games? I understand, you know, you're trying to sell tickets and Saturday's a better opportunity. But to me, as you're seeing with Rutgers and UCLA in the same conference, clearly the TV execs don't care about your ticket sales. They care about, you know, just doing whatever they can to college football. But I just think Boise State was very cutting edge by getting out there on those Thursday nights and not maybe Friday nights, whatever it was. I think that helped their national identity. I think, you know, getting into everyone's living room and saying, who is this team on this blue turf? You know, I'll be honest. I thought Fresno was going to destroy you guys because Pat Hill had that team rolling. And you know, you guys came out and I think it was Brock Forzy or something at the running back spot that, and I was like, who? I knew they were winning games, but what are they doing here in Fresno? Are you kidding me? So do you think that played a big role though? Is that television side?
Without question. And part of that was, again, the emergence of ESPN and start marketing and putting on more games. Dave Brown, who used to work for them, who's got his own scheduling site now. Dave used to work with ESPN, and he was always trying to match. He and I would get after it sometimes because he'd want to move somebody in the schedule and slide them up and try to push people around. And football coaches, as you all know, we're kind of creatures of habit, and it's kind of every Tuesday is Groundhog Day. But when you play Thursday and then you play Friday and you play Saturday, you have to be flexible in how you schedule and how you game plan and put your game plan in, because those short weeks, you got to know how to do that. Now, after a while, we figured it out and we had a pretty good formula. But yeah, I mean, everybody saw you. I mean, I remember when we first changed the logo, our athletic director, he just wanted the horse, which is the horse head, which is on there now. But I told him, I said, Gene, put Boise State on there, because there's a lot of teams there, the horses, like the horse head. They're not going to know who we are. We need to put Boise State on there. Well, then eventually we were able to take Boise State off there and just go with the horse head. But yeah, when you're on national TV 5, 6 times, 7 times a year, and then, you know, we had a good team and we were playing well, we had good players and we're doing some fun stuff and some exotic stuff, and people, you know, kind of got into the whole Bronco magic. And I mean, shoot, I'd see people all over the country getting an airport and,
yeah,
you know, wearing Bronco gear and been there, didn't know. I mean, I heard a couple one time in a coffee shop saying, oh, you know, we're going to move to Boise. And I said, excuse me, why are you going to move to Boise? And they said, I don't know, it just seems like a magical place. Well, they'd never been there. They didn't know. They just had watched the football team. They just thought, oh, it's a magical place, you know? And so it's interesting, the power of influence and how that works.
Yeah. And I got to give you credit also for being one of the first Californians, I feel like, to go to Idaho, because when I, as someone that's a Californian now, me and my brother went to a Boise game. We went out there and caught the BYU Boise a couple of years back. And we went up to, you know, Sun Valley, I think, after that. And my brother resides in North Carolina. He gets ID'd at the bar. Everyone likes him. I got ID'd in California. Like, oh God, another one of these guys. So you were one of the first, though. You were one of the first to come up there. But yeah, magical run there at Boise. And that would have been, I always think, like, what if there was a big playoff back then? And you never know. You know, Boise showed the track record of beating so many, you know, big programs with you or Chris Peterson, or Dirk Cutter. And Brian Harsin, I'm waiting for him to get back in coaching. I thought he got a raw deal there at Auburn. Just 2 years, you know, you said you played with them. So, but what'd you think about that situation there at Auburn?
For Harsh? Well, here's the thing. I mean, I totally get it. People goes, hey, should you get 5 years? And I really tell people you better do something in two, just because it is what it is. And people hate that saying, but you better jumpstart and you better make some momentum going. Clearly he was an outsider going there. We know that doesn't always match up well. So you better turn it over in a heartbeat, because it's every little thing matters. I certainly learned that, you know, at Colorado. So, it's not whether he got a good deal or bad deal. I mean, obviously he got paid a lot of money. A lot of people would love to have that. I think he knew what he was doing when he got into it. And we all know it's a pressure cooker. And I think the average length for coaches these days, I think it's a little over 3 years. I'm not sure. So
yeah, it's just the nature of the beast. Right?
Yeah, it is. And Harsh is a good coach and he's done a great job. And unfortunately didn't go his way there for a variety of reasons. And, you know, they made the change.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be back soon. I think his track record will get him back as well. You know, you mentioned Colorado. I was doing my homework on what happened in Boulder, and to me, you know, I look back at your tenure, and I told you pre-episode that I grew up a Colorado fan, but you know, it is what it is. And to me, you know, I look back at that and I go, man, not only did you beat the number one team in the nation, Bob Stoops in Oklahoma, you also beat Georgia, and you had, I think I counted, 21 of your losses by, you know, like 13 points or less. You were in all these games. What do you look back at that and just say, was there something that you would correct, or is it just bad? You know, sometimes it's just bad luck, right?
Well, hey, I'm a little bit, you know, the luck is infatuated with the efficient. And I'm also the guy, I think no matter what happens, you have to own it. Otherwise you have no, I used a lot of that knowledge when I went to Davis and we were there 2 years and won the conference in our second year, won a playoff game. I thought we did a good job at Colorado, but not good enough. And what I mean by that is, you know, those kids in that community were really battered around by what had happened there the two previous years. I needed to do a better job of getting alums and players on board and finding out where they were. I mean, I didn't come in there throwing my weight around, but I needed to dig down a little deeper, and I didn't. And we talked a little bit about the air raid. I mean, looking back on it now, you're at altitude, probably should have went. We tried to go no huddle. We were on the Gus Malzahn train. Jeff Grimes, who's now the OC, was at Baylor. He's now at Kansas. Grimey was our O-line coach. Mark Helfrich was our OC, who went on to Oregon fame. And we tried to get going that way, but it was hard. We'd come out of the shifting, motioning, trying to get leverage and advantage and numbers and just trying to do it. And I kind of screwed that up, kind of switching around a little bit mainstream. So I think if I had it to do all over again, yeah, I'd go in there and go no huddle, go fast, do the air raid, do the run and shoot, throw the heck out of it, score a lot of points, run people ragged. If you're trying to jumpstart and get going fast, which I didn't. And then even though I embrace the buff culture, I just need to do a better job. Quite frankly, there was a player that played there once that a few years ago saw me and he apologized. I said, what are you apologizing for? He goes, coach, you just don't know. It could have been you. It could have been anybody else. But we were in so much pain after what we went through. We weren't going to like anybody that came in there. But there are a lot of those things. Obviously, the Cody, when your kid's the quarterback, that drew a lot of fire. That's always a lightning rod. I think Cody showed his true colors in that deal. I think it's funny. Everybody has opinions about, hey, I benched him. We benched him. I'm like, we tried to shake it up. It wasn't, you know, and me, I'm not running in the staff meeting telling, hey, quite frankly, Mark Helfrich wanted Cody to take off his red shirt our first year there. And I said, hey, don't talk to me. You better talk to him. Yeah. And so people have what they think is the story on that and what it is. But I learned a lot there. There were some great people there. It is a great place. It's a beautiful place. They've had tremendous. I was very fortunate because Bill McCartney was really, really nice to me. So you got a guy who had coached with at Michigan and legendary. Then we had the former coach been with Bud Wilkinson in Oklahoma. These guys mentoring me. I mean, it was great. I'm not going to lie. It was painful. It was hard, super hard every day at the tip of the spear, trying to figure it out. And that was extremely hard. But like I said, I learned a lot. I really did. And I put it to use. I think Cody's putting it to use right now at Idaho State. So, you know, you can lose, but don't lose the lesson. But I have a lot of fond memories of Colorado and some tough ones as well. And I wish we could have put more wins on the table, but
I always feel like
hopefully Prime will get her going.
Yeah, I always feel like you learn more when you struggle. You know what I mean? Like when you struggle, whatever, for whatever reasons, you know. But the fact was, you guys were in more close games, and I think you look at other Colorado coaches in the tenure after that. You know, I feel like you were right there in a lot of the stuff there. But and maybe Coach Prime will get it going. How would you feel about bringing in 53 recruits? Or I'm sorry, transfers. 53 transfers. How's that?
Well, I mean, he's obviously been in pro football and understands that whole mechanism. And quite frankly, I think that's probably what Power Five football is becoming more like. Is pro sports without regulation and trying to figure out, can we run a system that's easily learnable and you can get guys in there in a couple of weeks, get them up and running? I think you have to change your mentality of you're not throwing some young kid in the weight room for 3 years and tell him to go lift and eat and we'll see you in 3 or 4 years and get it going. So The culture part is hard, trying to anchor that down. I mean, he's got his son there, and that'll help. Son's there, so that'll help get that organized. But I think you're just gonna have to shift how you do things. I mean, you know, if you ever listen to a pro football call play, they pretty much tell everybody what to do. They tell it's not just, hey, blue, right, monkey. I mean, it's X here, Y there, F, you know, so because they don't know. They don't know the playbook, and they're trying to learn it. And I think that's going to happen in college as well. And ironically, they're going to the headset now, so maybe that'll help that.
Do you think, you know, and I think this is something you've seen it, you know, whether it's basketball, whether it's Coach K, whether it's Roy Williams, whether it's Nick Saban, whether it's Jay Wright, do you think a lot of this, you know, is driven behind the transfer portal, NIL, you know, do you have your team really set right now? I saw John Calipari's press conference at Arkansas. I don't know if you saw this. It was hilarious. Actually, I could play the clip. Hang on. Listen to this. This is John Calipari at his press conference at Arkansas.
And you know what? I'm jacked about another opportunity. Like, I'm like, let's go. Now, I met with the team. There is no team.
I mean, look, I know that sometimes I could be like the get off my lawn Clint Eastwood guy, but come on, that's gotta be a factor in these guys retiring. And I got to ask you then, with the scene, the way it is now, and I know it was probably less in the FCS, but I still think it's relevant in the FCS, is would you have gotten to coaching knowing you'd have to deal with all this? You know, if you were, you know, say your son's age or something at the time, would you still dive into it?
Well, yes. I'm at the heart of it. To me, it's about mentoring people and mentoring kids. I love to compete. I love the science of football. I love all that. I think throughout our history, and I always tell people, I mean, I got all this gray hair now, which is shocking to me, but you know, I think through my lifetime, seeing a president assassinated, one impeached. I mean, kids today didn't even see 9/11, going through Vietnam, cocaine. I mean, just kids being shot at Kent State. I mean, we've seen a lot of stuff, a lot of crazy stuff. And even my school, Davis, going from non-scholarship to scholarship. So I think change is, it's just going faster. Our society's accelerating faster than it ever has before. And I tell coaches now when I go talk to staffs and I say, look, just, why did you get into coaching? Why? I think that drives everything. And if it's about the kids and the people and doing what's right by them and the science of your sport, you cling to that because there's always going to be noise flying around. Now, does that make it harder? Yes. But I've said for a while, I don't know why an AD or football coach can leave, but a kid can't leave. I didn't get that. And it's like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, you know, nature will find a way. This stuff it's going to equalize here. The economics of some kids going to jail for tax fraud, or you're going to see some things happen and it's going to settle down and people are going to go, well, the grass isn't always greener. And what does that really mean? But I think you just have to say, hey, it's about people. It's about mentoring people and doing what's best by them. I mean, we had one of our kids go to Washington. This is from Davis now. We had a kid go to Tennessee. We just had a kid go to Cal and a kid go to Arizona. Well, you know, on one hand, does that hurt? Yeah, kind of. But if you're really saying I'm for what's best for the kid, like if you're really saying that, yeah, and that's what you really coach for, and if that's best for him, you know, one of our kids along the way there, his family didn't have a lot of money, nor did he. And I told him, I go, hey, dude, if you can get six figures, like do it. Like yeah, you need to do it. So I think you got to put what's best for them, not for you, and deal with the cards how they lay out. But I mean, clearly, and you saw the Roy Williams press conference some years ago when he resigned and he made the statement several times, I'm not your guy. I'm not your guy. Well, to me, that was saying he goes, hey, this isn't my genre. I'm not in this wheelhouse. So change is hard. Change is hard for all of us, but you know, I say you just embrace it. You go with it. You learn to treat the kids right and do what's right and dive into the science of football. But that stuff doesn't really bother me. Because like I said, I've always coached to make a difference in people's lives and the kids' lives. And so stuff that goes outside of it is noise. And, you know, unfortunately, when we pack our cell phone around, there's noise in there all the time.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you got to turn that off. It's like when you kept trying to get a hold of me. I have Twitter, but it's not on my phone.
I love it. I love it. Look. I was funny. I was telling my wife that I was like, he doesn't even have it on his phone. I was like, I we'll see when he writes me, but next. But I respect that. I'm of the generation. I feel like we got to see all this at the forefront. I'm 41 years old. I remember times before the internet. I also remember in high school, I didn't have a phone. I think I was the last generation that didn't have a phone in high school. And sometimes my wife's Colombian. I went to Colombia for a month last May, man, the internet, the internet doesn't really, I mean, it exists, but it's just, it's harder to get online and stuff. So like, to me, I basically did like a month internet free, man. It felt good. It felt good. I was like, man, I feel like we should have some type of thing where we could just turn off the button for a month or something here in the States. But at the same time, my job, you know, works around this. But I think, you know, the portal, and that's another thing, though. I actually think, you know, a lot of people say like the rich get richer with the transfer portal or NIL, and maybe in that NIL case, but I think there's examples. You just laid out, you know, how Boise State's, you know, I know they got Malachi Nelson, a five-star from a USC coming in. You know, I think the NIL actually, we'll see long-term, but I think it could actually help, you know, make the sport, you know, more diverse as far as who's going to be winning and competing at a high level. Now, I think, you know, the transfer portal, and I'd be curious to get your take on this. Like when you were at Boise State, if you had a weakness, if you knew like, hey, your run defense isn't going to be that great this year, you didn't have access to all these players. Is that a?
I'm going
to
plug my computer in here.
Hold okay. On. Okay. But you didn't have access to all those players. So I would think, though, that right then you would say, you know, it's just going to be a tough year. We got to do our best. We just got to do our best and we'll see how the season ends up. But now you can go find, I mean, heck, we saw a first rounder, Florida State, who went undefeated in the regular season last year with an Albany transfer, who was ended up being a first round draft pick. So if their scouting department is hip enough to it, you know, you can go out and get a great player. And all of a sudden the weakness of your team becomes a strength. Do you feel like there's some merit in what I'm saying there?
I do. I think you have to be careful with the culture of your squad. And this could be the same thing as a junior college player. If you're trying to bring guys in and develop and grow them up and get them into your program, you always have some holes that you have to fit guys in. But I think you have to be careful of just bringing in a free agent, because then where's the pot of gold for the freshman that comes in and says, well, I'm going to redshirt, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to eat, I'm going to lift, I'm going to be a backup guy, I'm going to be a special teams guy, I'm going to work my way in there, when all they do is just bring people in above me. That's hard. That's hard on your culture. So I think you have to be careful of that. Now, just like with a junior college player, sometimes, you know, oh my gosh, we were decimated at O-line. We have to get two transfer O-line. We have to. We cannot line up next year that way. So I think it does give you an opportunity. Now, again, you get into the bidding wars, and I know a lot of my guys at Power Five teams, the first question is, what's your number? That's what it is. Yeah. It's what's your number? What are we dealing with? So I was looking at the draft too, and I didn't go through it exactly, but first year in a long time, because normally you see some FCS guys. I mean, New England took a D2 guy a couple of years ago in the first round. But boy, I'll tell you what, the vast majority of those guys getting drafted were Power Five guys. So why is that? Well, they're all swimming upstream. And I get that. Yeah. I get that. But you know, we've had two guys go Power Five from Davis, and they played a lot, but they did not get drafted. Still free agent guys. So I think it's going to take a while for kids to learn that too. It's like, well, these guys left, but they didn't necessarily get drafted. Now, hey, if you want to go for the experience and play at that level, I totally get it. Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get drafted.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, I do wonder if it ever slows down, but I still think the money will be too much with the divide coming with the Big Ten and the SEC, that I don't know. Maybe it will slow down some between, you know, group of five and FCS or something.
I think what will happen is you're seeing it already. I think the there's going to be all those people that philosophically and financially can do it, and they're going to move. They're going to move. You know, the NC2A has been weakened anyway, and they're going to go do their own rules and do their own thing and play in their own playground. And then I think there's going to be a settling back of people that want to play college athletics. And what does that mean? And what rules do we play by in that space? I really believe that's coming. I think most people think that's coming. The silly thing to me is that you have this rule book. Well, how can you have a rule book that governs all these sports and all these levels? Like I don't get that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'll give you one example. Like there's a rule, believe it or not, this past year. Now, mind you, at Davis, we have two people that are paid to be equipment people. And then we have maybe two or three students, maybe. We don't have a huge. So, you know, our equipment girl is running the chains like during practice. Well, guess what? That's a rule. You can't do that. Like, and she could not spot the ball. So when your offense is moving, it has to be one of the managers. Well, at the FCS level, we don't have, you know, maybe if you're at an SEC school, you've got 20 managers, not at the FCS level. So we're following this same rule that all these, it makes no sense. And then you got people on D3 schools. And hey, I coached at Willamette. I love Smalk. I got nothing against it. But why are they sitting on a committee that's making decisions that affect a group of five team or a power five team? Like, we just got to get away from that and start letting people govern their own sphere of existence and actually follow the rules, have common sense rules that they do follow. But unfortunately, we've seen, I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Fourth Turning, but we go through these cycles in our society, and you know, sometimes things have to collapse a little bit before people get back and rebuild it in a common sense way.
Well, I hope college football, like as part of the allure to college football for me was the history of these rivalries and the, you know, whether it was, you know, old school Harvard Yale or Army Navy, or at the same time, the Iron Bowl. I would love it to all. I'm naive to think that it's all going to stay, because I do believe that you're right that it's going to happen. This divide. I think the P5 will probably leave, but I still say, you know, me and my brother talk about this all the time. Give me the group of five. Give me the FCS together. That sounds amazing to me. That sounds amazing to me with the playoff and everything. Conference winners have our own little NCAA tournament there. I hope the FCS gets more national exposure. I love the FCS, and I just wish they would be a little more creative about when they played. I would try to get more ESPN games on Thursday, Friday, like Boise State. Why doesn't the Big Sky capitalize on that?
Well, I think it probably has more to do. I mean, we're on ESPN Plus. All of our games are on ESPN Plus, but I think Montana played on a Friday night one time. I think there was a playoff game on a Friday night, but you know, a lot of that is determined by ESPN. So unless they're going to put you on the Deuce or the Main, you're probably not going to play on a Thursday or Friday night. So that's a whole, they've got their whole match in early in the week. I think that's a whole ESPN issue.
Gotcha. Well, look, I know you've been with me for 46 minutes. I didn't know it was going to run this late. So, but I did want to, you know, you live on through us here at the College Football Experience. I just want to get your comments on a clip that we play all the time.
No, don't play that.
I don't
want to hear that. Don't play.
Okay.
Let me tell you the truth behind that story.
Okay.
Okay. If you know me, I can get animated and I can get ham and egg it a lot. And what that taught me was the kind of the power of media to some degree. But we were sitting around with some of these media guys, and I know there's nothing off the record, and I was really more ham and egging it than anything else. And I made that comment, and it was true. What I said was true, but I was really just, because if you know me, when I get really mad, I can hardly move my mouth. I'm like this. So this guy had it on his website. I mean, sat there for like 2 weeks. I didn't really know about it. And then all of a sudden it took off. And, you know, people said, oh, were you mad about it? Were you embarrassed about it? Were you? And I said, well, it's none of that really. It's more just the the misinterpretation. And I had friends of mine say, hey, I saw you on, and I said, no, you didn't see me. They go, yeah, I did. I go, I'll pay you $1 million if you show me a video clip that shows me saying that. But again, it's the power of suggestion. Like a lot of guys totally believe that they did see me saying that, which is not true. But anyhow, I was more having a negative than anything else. And then it kind of blew up like it was this big, big tirade. So
yeah. you kind of regret it then in a way, right?
I don't regret it. It's not okay. That I regret it. You know, you play in the clip. When I was doing ESPN work, sometimes you have to go in there. They would help coach you up. And boy, I don't know about you, but listening to me talk is nauseating to me. I don't care if I'm telling a joke. I'm like that. When Cody and I were coaching together, every time he'd be talking on the other field, I goes, how would I sound like? It's driving me crazy. But I don't regret it. It is what it is. But what I think is interesting is sort of that misinterpretation. And what it's led me to believe a little bit, as you well know, is no matter what we see, and of course it's getting worse now with different scientific advancements, is that really what they said? And how did they say it? And why did they say it? And what was the meaning behind it? Was that just a snippet taken? And anyhow, yeah. It just kind of taught me the power, and I found that very interesting. But it also made me now, just because I hear something, I don't take it as like, oh my gosh, did you?
Yeah,
I just don't, because I know how it all goes.
I interviewed Jim Mora Jr. Jim Mora, but he doesn't go by the Junior. A lot of people think it's Junior, but yeah. I'm asking him about his dad's comments. He was like, I mess with my dad, but my dad hates the playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. And he's like, my dad still to this day, it bothers him. It bothers him that it became a thing. So the competitive nature, even in clips. Anyway, coach, I really appreciate you taking time out, and I hope you get back. I hope you get back in football. Although I'll be honest, following your Twitter, it seems like you're living a great life right now. You're living a great life right now, right?
I haven't really posted on there. I'm the classic retweeter. I don't know if I have a ton of original thoughts, but I'm the classic retweeter. I probably need to get on there. I have people hitting me up going, you could monetize that. You could. I'm like, that's just not me. I don't do that. That's not why I'm there. I think there's a lot of cool things on social media that you can learn from. I really love that. There's a lot of trash as well. You got to filter that out. But yeah, I just had a lot of people pave the way of good examples for me. If I find something good, I try to pass it along.
Well, you're doing a great job at that. Just for coming, making time for me. I really appreciate it. The interview ran longer than I thought. I was having such a good time. I apologize for running it, as long as it is. But thank you so much for joining the College Football Experience. And I wish you the best. And I'm excited to watch your son at Idaho State this year. And I hope you get back into football or do whatever, chase whatever passion.
Well, I might be wearing one of those this year.
There we go. Go Idaho State Bengals. We'll all be watching. And I really appreciate you helping on the show.
All right. Thank you.
The great Dan Hawkins. How about that? I thought that was a really cool interview. Great to learn about some of the history with Boise State and some of his connections there with Coach Leach and everything. Hope you guys dug the show. If you did, hit that like, hit that subscribe, youtube.com/thecollegeexperience. I'm sure we'll have Dan Hawkins back. He's awesome. That was really cool. It was really nice of him to hang out for as long as he did and talk ball. And I didn't get a chance. I had a bunch of questions there. I wanted to ask him more questions. Didn't get a chance to, but I will get to that in part two, because we've already talked off air about doing it again. So folks, if you can subscribe to the College Football Experience, youtube.com/thecollegefootballexperience. youtube.com/thecollegeexperience. Hit that like, hit that subscribe. We're just getting started. We're about to preview all 134 FBS teams in the next. We're going to start that journey in the next couple of weeks. Maybe some other guests will join us. We have Phil Steele normally come on the show, stuff like that. So buckle up. And if you're wondering, you can also give us a follow on Twitter at TCE on SGPN. I'm on Twitter at the Colby D. And Coach Hawkins, he's got his Twitter out there. Look, I know he just said that he doesn't really use it. He doesn't even have it on his phone, but I can tell you this. He did have a couple videos of him like hiking up in the mountains somewhere that looked cool. So give him a follow at Wandering Sail 34. Also check out the Big 12 Experience to see Moneyline Mac here. Big 12 Experience up next, looking at some spring power rankings, and don't forget the College Basketball Experience hitting you with the portal news each and every day. Portal news, coaching news. It's been bonkers. Check it all out, folks. Check out the College Baseball Experience as well with Noah Beanick. Until next time, folks, this is the College Football Experience, Dan Hawkins interview style. You better start thinking about yours, and we out of here.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.